Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
3 weeks ago, we had a very special Old Masters series show, The Art of War Copywriting Edition. And you might remember I showed you this. It's the copywriting sword, and I pointed out that for copywriters, except for the martial arts guys and the swordsman, the pen is mightier than the sword. But we only covered the first half of the book, Art of War, and we now make that previous episode part one. And today we cover the rest of the book, chapters 7 through 13, and that makes it part two. So here's what you need to know. The Art of War was written by Sun Tzu. You may say Sun Tzu. I'm trying to say it in the Cantonese way. Sun Tzu. About 2,500 years ago, as a treatise on military strategy. The Art of War reaches far beyond military warfare, however. Business overachievers like the notorious Elon Musk and Mark Benioff, founder of Salesforce, are among the many who have praised the book. That's because the principles in this book are universal and very powerful in any situation where you're in a struggle, and getting people to buy from the written word certainly counts as a struggle. Today you'll see exactly how Sun Tzu's principles, when applied to copy, can sharpen your copy, position your offers better, and persuade prospects more naturally. I got to tell you, I was surprised when I was preparing this show how easily his principles can be applied to copy. I should also mention that no customers or subscribers were harmed in the preparation of this podcast, just as no one is harmed when I remind you that copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you hear, for how you use what you hear in this podcast, and most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims or if you're writing for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time.
I'm going to jump in real quick before we start this. You mentioned you were surprised by how easily the principles of this book applied to copy. Sure. I want to give, we touched on this last episode, I just want to frame it a little bit. The principles in this book are very much about mass group psychology and individual personal one-on-one psychology. And when we're writing copy, we're usually mass broadcasting, but we're also trying to keep that one-to-one communication. So for that reason, I think it makes a lot of sense that the principles here apply to copy.
Yeah, I'd agree. There's a reason Art of War has lasted more than 2,000 years, and it's not just because people like reading about swords and spears. It's because the way, like you said, the way Sun Tzu thought about winning applies anywhere there's competition, whether it's two armies on the field, two companies in the market, or two people, one you sitting at the keyboard trying to outsell some other guy. When you're writing copy, you're not just putting words together. You're maneuvering, you're positioning, you're adapting. You're watching for the right moment to strike. So if you've ever had a great piece of copy flop or a headline you love get ignored or a competitor suddenly steal your customers, you felt the same frustration a general feels when a battle falls apart. And Sun Tzu didn't leave that to chance. He studied how to win before the fight began and how to keep control until the very last move. So today we're going to tap into the last 7 chapters of his book. These are chapters about keeping your opponent guessing, matching your tactics to the exact ground you're on, knowing when to press hard and when to pull back, and gathering the kind of intelligence that lets you win before the other side knows what has happened. That sounds good to me. So let's get started. Okay. Our section one is from chapter 7. And section one is maneuvering and copywriting. So in The Art of War, Sun Tzu talks about the difficulty of maneuvering an army. He advises leaders to decide quickly to appear where unexpected. For copywriters, maneuvering means moving your reader step by step through a message without them realizing they're being led. And when you're doing that right, they enjoy every moment. The key is to position yourself and your offer in a way that makes the final yes feel inevitable, even though you took an indirect route to get there. A strong hook is your first maneuver, not the obvious headline that says, "Buy this now." Instead, you open with something that generates curiosity and tension. Maybe it's a fact that doesn't fit, a problem they didn't realize they had, a story they can't stop reading until they know how it ends. Whatever it is, it must point towards the bigger idea behind your offer, but without giving the whole game away in the first sentence. Then keep them guessing until the end. Good fiction does this, and it's a technique that we can profitably use in copywriting too. Because when your reader knows the ending, there's a good chance they'll stop reading before they get there. So feed them information in a way that feels natural while you're still in. So lead them in a way that feels natural while you're fully in control of the path. From the hook to the close, present each step so, while it may be surprising, the next one still makes perfect sense to them. And then when they arrive at the yes, it feels like it was their idea all along. That's when you know you've maneuvered well. Yeah.
I read recently, great sales copy isn't about pushing a product. It's about guiding the thought process.
Ooh, I love that. And that's just what this is, what we just talked about. Yeah. All right. Section 2, which is chapter 8 of the book, is about variation of tactics in copywriting. Sun Tzu warns that if you always fight in the same way, the enemy learns how to beat you. In copywriting, if you always write the same way, your readers learn how to ignore you. So don't be too predictable. If every headline feels the same, if every email starts the same way, if every offer sounds like the last one, your readers tune out. Surprise is what keeps attention alive. Now, variation starts with testing. Test headlines, not just for words, but for tone, for semantic quality. One headline might be urgent and direct. Another could be intriguing and understated. Test openings. Try starting with the story in one version and a startling fact in another. Test the core angle. Maybe in one test, you position the product as a time saver, in another as a status booster. When you see what works best, you don't just get a winning ad. You get insight into your market. Sometimes variation means stepping outside your own habits. If you're always serious, try injecting dry humor. If you're always short and punchy, try slowing down and building a more detailed narrative. You don't change who you are as a writer. You change the mood in which you deliver the message. Remember, your best tactic will eventually wear out. The headline formula that doubled your sales this quarter could flatline the next one. The story that once got rave reviews might feel stale after you've sent it three times. When you notice a tactic is losing power, retire it before the audience gets bored. Bring it back later if it still works. Rotation keeps your arsenal sharp. Don't think of variation as chaos. Instead, think of variation as a controlled mix of tactics that keeps your reader leaning forward, curious about what you're going to say next. And remember, by using variation, you are hardly abandoning proven strategies. Not at all. Instead, you're refreshing the strategies in new ways so they keep on working. Remember, your goal is constant re-engagement, so your prospect never drifts away. That's how variation turns into consistently. Not always totally consistent in style, but consistent in results.
I love this. I'm thinking about a general on a battlefield who only has one play in their playbook, or a football team that only has one really good solid play. And it might work, but as soon as the other coach or the other general realizes, hey, this is what they always do, you can form a defense against it. In the battle for attention, it's the same thing. If it's the same play that I've seen 8 other gurus use, and you use the exact same hook or the exact same headline that I've already seen 8 times, I've been able to form a mental defense against it.
Yeah, really, really good point. You gotta be able to surprise them. Section 3, which is chapter 9, The Army on the March, Understanding Your Audience's Environment. In The Art of War, Sun Tzu explains that an army on the move must pay careful attention to terrain, weather, and the enemy's behavior. He stresses the importance of choosing high ground, securing supply lines, and spotting signs of the enemy's intentions before they strike. This environmental awareness often means the difference between victory and disaster. Now, for copywriters, the terrain is your audience's environment, the world they live in, and the factors influencing their decisions. You can write the most persuasive copy in the world, but if it doesn't fit into what's happening in your reader's life or industry, it can still fail. So start by anticipating external conditions that could affect how your audience sees your message. Are there economic changes making people more cautious with money? Is a competitor making big moves in the market? Are there new trends shifting what your audience values most? Staying alert to these conditions lets you tailor your message so it feels relevant and timely. Next, secure your supply lines by making your messaging resilient against objections and disruptions. Think about what could cause a reader to lose trust or abandon the sale. Price concerns, skepticism about results, confusion over the offer, and address these proactively in your copy. When you handle potential roadblocks in advance, your message stays strong no matter what else is happening around it. Finally, keep your eyes on the enemy's movements by tracking and analyzing feedback. Monitor your analytics, watch response rates, and pay close attention to comments or questions from your audience. These are your signals, clues about how your market is feeling right now. Are your open rates dropping? Maybe your subject lines aren't connecting. Are conversions rising on one particular offer? Double down on what's working. Just like a general on the march, a copywriter must stay aware of the environment, protect the essentials, and read the signs. By doing this, you'll position yourself to avoid ambushes, spot opportunities early, and keep your copy on the winning path.
I think it was Robert Collier said, join the conversation that's already happening in your prospect's mind. I think that fits perfectly here.
Yeah, it really does. It's a good point. All right, section 4, matching your copy to the terrain. That's from chapter 10 of the book. Sun Tzu advised spending a lot of time studying the ground before sending troops forward. Now, for us, the ground or terrain is the mental and emotional ground our prospects are standing on when they encounter our message. And here's why that's important. A prospect who's hopeful reads different from one who's desperate. A skeptical reader needs proof. A confused reader needs clarity. A hopeful reader wants a vision of what's possible. A desperate reader needs a lifeline. If you use the wrong approach for the terrain you're on or your prospects on, you'll lose them before you even get moving. So your job is to figure out where the prospect's head and heart are at right now. And that means paying close attention to their language in reviews, forums, and social media. It means paying attention to what questions they're asking and noticing which ones they're not asking. It also means knowing the events of the external world that are shaping their mood. A sudden industry shakeup could make even your most loyal customers feel anxious. A win in the news for your kind of product could put them in a more open, optimistic state. Here's some specific tactics for each type of emotional ground. If they're skeptical, load your copy with proof, hard data, credible testimonials, demonstrations. If they're confused, strip away complexity. Use clear benefits and obvious next steps. Work hard to make your descriptions and explanations simple and easy to understand. If they're hopeful, paint a picture of what their life could be with your solution and show them exactly how to get there. If they're desperate, move quickly to the core benefit and the relief that it brings. Then back it up with proof so they can act without second guessing. But understand this, because it's very important. Matching their terrain doesn't mean reinventing your brand. It simply means adjusting your emphasis so that your message lands on receptive ground. After all, your offer is going to stay the same. It's just the way you present it that changes. Think of it like a photographer adjusting the angle and lighting to bring out the best shot of the same subject. And here's a key lesson from this section. Most copy misses the mark because it's written for an imaginary average customer. That's like marching into battle without looking at the hills, rivers, or obstacles in the way. When you write to the actual terrain, not the one you wish you had, you're speaking directly to what's real for your reader. They feel seen, they feel understood. And that's the first step to getting them to move with you. Terrain changes, your offer might not, but your copy must shift so it always matches the ground under your prospect's feet.
I'm thinking, I want to get your input on this. I'm thinking if you're selling to different parts of your audience, or maybe also dependent on what your offer is. If you're selling a weight loss supplement and your market has heard all the promises before, they're probably very skeptical and you should lean in on the proof. If you're selling a brand new product that is revolutionary and nobody's ever heard of before, they might be very confused. And so you want to lean in on the clarity. So depending on the nature of your offer, it might impact this. But also, if you're selling to your core, very product solution aware people, you might go with one, but then when you're selling to the people that are on the outskirts of that group, you might shift tone as well based off of who you're targeting.
Yeah. I mean, you could, if all of those people are on one email list or, you know, one Facebook ad delivery niche or whatever, you might vary the ads from simplifying to proof heavy to something else. You might try multiple approaches to the same large group if it has different sectors like that. I think so.
All right.
I see Jupiter has entered the room.
She's photobombing the video episode for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So section 5, writing for every situation, which is chapter 11 in the book. Okay. Sun Tzu described 9 different battlefield situations, and each one calling for a different approach. With the 4 minutes we have to cover in this section of the podcast, we're not going to have time for 9 copywriting situations and strategies. So we'll boil it down to 3. In copywriting, the different battlefields you have to face have to do with how ready your prospect is to buy. And this is just common sense. After all, cold prospects won't respond to the same message that works for someone who's nearly ready to buy. Because when you use the same approach for everyone, you'll either scare people off who aren't ready or lose them through boredom when they're ready to take action. So your first move is to determine the situation. When someone's never heard of you, they're a cold prospect and they're not looking for a sales pitch. What are they looking for? A reason to care. In this situation, your copy needs to focus on the problem they face and the bigger context around it. When you're showing them you understand why their problems matter and why solving it should be high on their radar and indeed high on their priority list, that can work. Writing to prospects in this situation, though, is about planting seeds, not harvesting. The second situation is a market of warm prospects. They know who you are. Maybe they've read your emails, seen your ad, or bought something from you before. With these prospects, you can start connecting the dots between their problem and your solution. You build emotional momentum, showing them how your offer fits perfectly into the story they're already living. The tone shifts from "here's why this matters" to "here's why you can't miss this." Now we're in a situation finally called hot prospects, and this is a time for direct, decisive copy. Make everything as clear and smooth as possible. Your job is to remove any last-minute friction so the yes feels easy. You still need proof here, but it serves a different function. It's to reinforce what they already know and believe, rather than to convince them by removing skepticism. You should have already done that earlier. Knowing the stage your prospect is in requires careful observation. Look at behavior, opens, clicks, replies, time spent on page. See where they've come from, a referral, an ad, a free download, a webinar. Each path tells you something about their readiness. And here's a direct parallel to the original art of war. Just like in battle, situations change quickly. A cold prospect can warm up fast, right after a breakthrough ad. A hot prospect can cool off if all of a sudden they come up with unexpected objections. So make sure your copy feels like the right conversation at the right time. See, that's when prospects move naturally to the next step, and you get the progress you're looking for without forcing the outcome.
I'm thinking of dating or marriage advice. What works in the dating stage is going to lead to disaster in the marriage stage. So if you're just giving blanket advice on here's how to message to a woman or here's how to message to a guy, it needs to be tailored towards, well, are they a hot prospect? Are they a cold prospect? And for copywriting, one example that I've run into with this before is sales pages. Sales pages that we send people to from an ad versus sales pages that people see for the exact same offer, but after they've watched a webinar. And after they've watched a webinar, they don't want the fluff. They don't want the buildup. They just want the buy now button. But if it's coming from an ad, you've got to set all of the framing. And so two sales pages for the same offer will work differently based off of where the person is coming from. I thought that was a really great point that you made.
Thanks. And really, really great way to illustrate it too. All right, let's go to section 6, Lighting a Fire Under Your Reader, which is chapter 12 in the book. Now, in the book, Sun Tzu talks about attack by fire, and he means using a force that couldn't be ignored, one that spread quickly and left no doubt of its impact. For a copywriter, fire is emotional intensity. It's the spark that turns interest into urgency. It's interesting. Emotion is like lightning. It moves fast. Logic is like walking up a staircase. See, your prospect can understand your offer perfectly and not act with a logical situation. But if you make them feel something, excitement, fear of missing out, relief, pride, then the emotion can override the hesitation. It becomes harder for them to put your message aside. So how do you light the emotional fire? Start with stories. Prospects like this because they don't just read about a problem. They experience it. They don't just see a solution. They feel what it's like to have it. The more vivid and specific your story, the hotter the fire burns. Now, an important point to remember, Sun Tzu didn't recommend setting fires in the rain. In the same spirit, you shouldn't throw high-intensity copy into the wrong situation. If your audience is skeptical, start with proof before turning up the emotional heat. If they're already hopeful, a story of transformation might be exactly what gets them to act now. Match the type and level of emotion to the current mood of your market. But an emotional peak without a next step, that's wasted energy. Your call to action should appear when your reader is feeling it the most, not after they've cooled down. You've just told a story that makes the cost of inaction crystal clear. Well, put the buy now or sign up now button right there. If you've painted a vivid picture of the future they want, give them the path to get it while they're still imagining it.
This one, for me particularly, is the tension between the logic and the emotion that we say people buy based off of emotion and then they look for logic to back it up. Knowing when to trigger that emotion, knowing when to play off of that is so key. And then knowing what to do next once you've ignited that emotional state is important as well.
Yeah, it really is. And this is something that comes more from time than an experience and failure sometimes and winning for sure, but it comes from experience rather than just a formula or reading a book or attending a seminar. It's about engaging with the experience of life and the sales process. And sometimes this takes a little while to develop. All right. Section 7, the Copywriter's Intelligence Network. And this is chapter 13 in the book. So in The Art of War, Sun Tzu called for spies as essential for victory. In copywriting, spies are your sources, whether they're literal spies or otherwise, they're your sources of market intelligence. And the best copy, you were mentioning Robert Collier before, Nathan, right? This, here you go. The best copy sounds like it comes from inside your prospect's head. And that's not an accident. It's a result of knowing your prospects so well that you can describe their problem better than they can. When you do that, you earn their attention instantly. And you can't fake it. You need real intel. Now, the intel may be your own experience, but if it's not, your intel comes from spies of many forms: customer feedback, competitor analysis, market trend tracking. Each source gives you a piece of the map. Together, they show you the whole battlefield. But don't do this like a series of boxes to check on a checklist. See, anyone can skim a few reviews or glance at a competitor's ad. That's like sending out one scout for one afternoon. The real advantage comes from deep, ongoing observation and reflection. Look for repeated phrases in your prospect's own words. Track the emotional tone in their complaints and compliments. Notice what's missing from competitor messaging that your offer delivers. Over time, you'll see patterns that other people miss. Markets shift fast. What mattered to your audience a few months ago may not matter nearly as much now. Your spies keep you updated, so your copy never sounds out of touch.
Okay, I will add a caveat to this. Where your intelligence comes from matters. A lot of people say they want something, but their actions prove that they want something else. And so you can't always trust what they tell you with their words, but you usually can trust what they tell you with their actions. So surveys about people who haven't bought yet might not get you good information. Surveys from people who have bought might get you better information. And I remember for a number of years now, there was this advice: people buy because of the movement that they're part of and social values. And that made a big impact in marketing for a long time. And the people that they were getting those social values from were people who weren't buying. They were people who screamed and yelled on Twitter about the things that they were offended of or over. And a lot of marketing tailored towards what people were saying with their words and not actually buying with their actions. So be careful about who your spies are and the quality of the information that you're getting.
Yeah, that's really good. So another little trick is people will be hesitant to answer questions in a valuable way, but they're very quick to correct you. So you can also get market intelligence negatively. So from what I understand, you prefer whole milk to skim milk. I would never buy whole milk. Are you kidding? That fat is awful, right? As opposed to, what do you like, skim milk or whole milk? Mm-hmm. Well, whole milk does have that better flavor and so forth.
There's the old meme. If you need the answer to something, don't ask the internet. Post your own answer that you know is incorrect, and then people will tell you the right answer in the comments.
Exactly. So something to think about as an additional intelligence tool. All right, let's do a quick recap. So we had 7 sections, which were actually chapters 7 through 13 in The Art of War, and we renamed them for copywriting. So, and we started with, we called them sections 1 through 6, even though they covered chapter 7 And it's complicated. Let's just go. All right. Section 1, Maneuvering and Copywriting, Winning Copywriters, Guide Readers with Positioning, Timing, Surprise, Keeping Them Engaged from Hook to Close. 2, Variation of Tactics in Copywriting, Varying Your Headlines, Angles, and Tones, Prevents Predictability and Keeps Your Audience Curious. 3, Reading the Terrain in Copywriting. Understanding your audience's environment lets you match your message to their current reality. 4, matching your copy to the terrain. Different emotional terrains, skeptical, confused, hopeful, desperate, require different persuasive tactics. 5, writing for every situation. Cold, warm, and hot prospects each require a unique balance of education, excitement, and closing power. 6, lighting a fire under your reader. Emotional intensity, backed by proof, creates urgency that drives immediate action. And 7, the Copywriter's Intelligence Network. Deep, ongoing research into your audience ensures your copy hits the most responsive nerve.
Hmm. Okay, I never do this. I'm going to give people 2 calls to action at the end of this episode. Number 1, go and read The Art of War. It takes about an hour to sit down. You can get it done in a single afternoon, and it is such an amazing book. And then if you want to listen to the first part of this series and re-listen to this one, go to copywriterspodcast.com. You can catch both episodes there, as well as 400 plus other episodes on how to improve your copy and get more sales. copywriterspodcast.com. David, thank you so much for putting this together, man.
You're welcome, and I'd like to make a political statement if I could.
Oh, no.
I'm David Garfinkel, and I approve of your 2 calls to action.
Okay. All right. I don't think we can get canceled for that one, man. Until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. Bye. Stop using the hero's journey in your sales copy. My book, The Persuasion Story Code, will help you put together stories that convince your prospects and resolve their objections. If you are a copywriter, you'll appreciate that every single one of the 25 kinds of stories in this book have been proven time and time again in profitable sales copy. But I've also used these kinds of stories to close 5- and 6-figure deals for my own business, and so have many of my clients. These stories are easy to create and easy to tell. They sound like ordinary conversation, but they are all designed and proven to lead to a yes. You can get the Persuasion Story Code on Amazon.com. So get your copy today.